Galilee. But he did not want anyone to know it because he was teaching them, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. And 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was talking about, and they were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "So, what were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent. For on the way, they had argued amongst each other about which of them was the greatest. So he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all, and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. May be seated. Let us pray. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on us today. Breathe on us the breath of life. Amen. Who is the greatest? It's a question that we ask all the time in our world. Who is the greatest football player? Who is the greatest basketball team? Who is the greatest rock band? When we have the answer to this question, there's usually an award or recognition for the person who has been deemed the greatest. Every year, sports teams announce their MVP for the year, their most valuable player. This person receives an award and prestige for being the greatest player. Who is the greatest? It's a question that we ask all the time, whether we realize it or not. And it's not a new question. In fact, this question is more than 2,000 years old. The disciples of Jesus asked this very question. They have been traveling around with Jesus, watching him do miracles, and they themselves have done miracles. They're now traveling south to Jerusalem and have come to their home region of Galilee. And as they are walking on the road to Capernaum, the disciples argue about which one of them is the greatest. I find it rather humorous that they are walking around with God in the flesh, who has just told them he will suffer and die, and they are arguing about which one of them is the greatest. They still don't get what following Jesus is all about. So here they are, wrestling with this question about which one of them is the greatest. Now maybe it starts with a conversation about the people that they have healed. And then it escalates into a comparison of exorcisms. And then it grows into a debate about which one of them is better at casting out demons. And then it snowballs into an all-out argument about which disciple is the greatest at casting out demons and healing people. I imagine them creating this tally system where they measure the disciples against each other, counting who has the most exorcisms and who has healed the most people. A calm conversation about healing has turned into a heated argument about who is the MVP of the disciples. Their argument is so loud that Jesus notices and he asks them what they are arguing about. And the disciples are silent because they are too embarrassed to tell Jesus what they were arguing about. Now, this scene is similar to the scene in my house when my daughter gets into something that she shouldn't get into, like a jar of Vaseline. When I ask her from the next room what she's doing, she's silent, because she doesn't want to fess up to the fact that she has rubbed Vaseline all over her face and her hair. The disciples are silent because they don't want to fess up to Jesus about their argument over who is the greatest. Now, it's humorous to me to see the disciples arguing about something that seems so trivial. I mean, what does it really matter which one of them is the greatest? But as I hear them arguing about this, I am reminded how often we get swept up into this same search for greatness and significance. We get caught up in ranking people, measuring them and us against each other to see who is better. We rank people based on how much money they have. There are countless business articles ranking the top 10 richest people in the world. We rank people by how much power and influence they have, measuring leaders in the business and political worlds according to how much power they have over others. As you might know, Forbes puts out a ranking list every year of the top most powerful people in the world. We rank celebrities as A-list stars, B-list stars, and C-list stars, measuring them on how famous they are. We rank people on how beautiful they are. Every year, People magazine names one celebrity woman as the most beautiful woman in the world. We rank sports teams by how many wins they have over their opponents. We rank leaders based on their accomplishments, measuring them according to their successes and accolades. We rank people based on the kind of house and neighborhood they live in and the kind of car they drive. We rank people according to how much they contribute to society, measuring them based on their ability to work and produce in our economy. This constant ranking, measuring, striving for greatness often leads to divisive competition. It turns our fellow human beings into opponents. We are constantly comparing ourselves to these opponents and striving to be better than them, continually ranking ourselves and them. In this ranking system, greatness is about being better than everyone else. It is defined by wealth, power, significance, achievements, notoriety, and strength. It is defined by our might over opponents. We often see political leaders boasting of this greatness that they possess and their ability by power and might to make us great. And in this competition for greatness, this striving for greatness, strength and dominance is prized. We turn in on ourselves and look out only for ourselves and our own to the detriment of everyone else. In this striving for greatness that we share with the disciples, Jesus tells us, whoever wants to be first must be last and a servant to all. He takes the competition to be the MVP and flips it on its head. Jesus presents an upside-down version of greatness, where the greatest are those who are not the most wealthy, the most powerful, the most successful, the strongest are those with the most wins. The greatest in God's kingdom are those who humble themselves, take the position of a lowly servant, and serve the vulnerable. And to further drive home this point, Jesus takes a child into his arms and says, whoever welcomes a child welcomes me. Children were viewed slightly different in the ancient world than they are now. Now, for sure, parents loved them, but children were looked upon as having little significance in society. When people looked at children, they weren't filled with images of innocence and potential for the future. When people looked on children, they saw that children had no legal rights, no influence, no political standing, and they weren't guaranteed to live very long. They had little to contribute to society and definitely did not hold positions of honor. They were completely dependent, completely powerless, completely vulnerable. They were not seen as great by society's standards. By welcoming this child and taking the child in his arms, Jesus further illustrates that greatness is defined by taking care of the most vulnerable in our society. Greatness is not about rubbing shoulders with the most powerful and most successful. Greatness is about serving those with little influence or power, those who are largely ignored by society. Greatness is about welcoming those who don't seem great by society's standards. Instead of striving to be the MVP and focusing our attention at the top of the ladder, we are called to focus our attention at the bottom of the ladder. By serving and welcoming the most vulnerable, the divisive competition for greatness gives way to the possibility for life-giving relationships that encourage and empower the vulnerable. No longer are we locked into a ranking system that breeds selfish competition. When we serve and share, we are now free to be in authentic relationships of love and mutuality with others. By serving and welcoming the most vulnerable, we in fact welcome Jesus himself. Jesus says, "Whoever welcomes this child welcomes me and the one who sent me." Jesus is found in the face of the powerless, in the face of those who have been pushed out to the margins by the MVPs. Jesus is found in the vulnerable face of children and the elderly, in the foreigner, in those who are disabled, in those who are poor, in those who are migrants and refugees. We expect to find Jesus among the strong MVPs, but we don't expect to find him in those who have been ignored by society. But that is in fact where we find him. When we welcome the vulnerable in our midst, we welcome Jesus, and we follow him on the path to the bottom of the ladder. Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church is located on the corner of Fifth Avenue and 55th Street in New York City. It's part of the city where the wealthy congregate. The exclusive St. Regis Hotel is nearby, where there is a Godiva chocolatier and a Louis Vuitton boutique on the ground floor. There is the Peninsula Motel nearby, where the rooms cost $1,390 per night. In the middle of this wealthy watering hole, the people at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian have a policy of allowing people living on the streets to sleep on their church property. Each morning, they invite them in to warm up and to shower. As you can imagine, the sight of 20 or 30 people sleeping in cardboard boxes in plain view of the wealthy shoppers, business people, and VIPs does not sit well with those in power. In 2001, church officials were asked to keep persons who were homeless off their property during the visits of important dignitaries who were staying in nearby hotels. The church obliged for these few instances, but when the people returned to sleep on their property, harassment began. First, police transported many of them away in vans. Then the police banged on their cardboard shelters throughout the night, continually waking them up. It was noted that police officers seemed uncomfortable with this, but they were following orders they received from on top. The church authorities at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian took the city of New York to court. And in 2006, the court ruled in the church's favor. The police were no longer allowed to remove them or harass them. Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church is great. Not because they won in court, but because they welcome the vulnerable. In God's kingdom, greatness is defined not by being the MVP, but by showing hospitality to those in need. In God's kingdom, greatness is defined not by how much we accumulate, but how much we give away. In God's kingdom, greatness is defined not by how much we achieve, but how much we help. In God's kingdom, greatness is not defined by how much power we hold, but how much we use our power to empower others. In God's kingdom, greatness is defined not by striving to be first, but by serving. Where in your life have you been striving for greatness as society defines it? How have you been measuring yourself, ranking yourself against others? When have you been swept up in focusing at the top of the ladder? We, like the disciples, may be too embarrassed to admit that we have been clamoring up the ladder, trying to be the MVP. But as we muster up courage to confess our striving, God turns our attention to the bottom of the ladder to find the greatness of God there. Thanks be to God.